Chapter 7. The Chase and the End of Dracula. Jonathan Harker's Journal, 4th of October. Yesterday we found all but one of those foul boxes brought to London by the Count. We had returned home after sterilizing them by putting a piece of the sacred wafer within each, and were all wondering what next to do when Mina asked me to get the Professor. She explained that if the Count's mind is connected with hers, then she might be able to discover where he is if Van Helsing tried to hypnotize her. After the Professor had put her into a kind of sleep, he asked her many questions. She described that all was dark, and she could hear the sound of water and the noise of feet coming from somewhere overhead. "He means to escape," said the Professor. "He is afraid. He has taken his last box on board a ship, and he is leaving. We must follow him for Madame Mina's sake." 6th of October. After some investigation, we found the ship that was carrying the Count. It is called the Tsarina Catherine and is on its way to Varna. The ship will take at least 3 weeks to reach Varna, but we can travel overland to the same place in 3 days. 28th of October. We waited many days for the ship in Varna, but one night a strange fog covered the city, so that we could see nothing. Later, we discovered that the ship had sailed past Varna and had landed a few hundred kilometers further up the river in Galatz. Mina Harker's Journal, 30th of October. When we arrived in Galatz, we found that the Count had once again escaped us, and that the box had been collected by his loyal gypsies to be taken back to his castle. Van Helsing hypnotized me once more, and afterwards he said that I spoke of seeing light and hearing the sound of water and the faraway howling of wolves. The Professor has suggested we split up. Jonathan and Mr. Holmwood will try to catch him by boat, and Mr. Morris and Dr. Stewart will hire horses and go after him by road. The Professor and I shall make our way by train and carriage to Castle Dracula, and try to stop him from entering his own home by sterilizing the earth and making it clean of evil. Memorandum by Abraham Van Helsing, 5th of November. We reached Borgo Pass just after sunrise 2 days ago, and all yesterday we travelled through the snow, getting closer and closer to the mountains. Madame Mina is slowly changing. She sleeps all through the day now and refuses to eat. When evening came, I made a fire to keep us warm. Then I drew a ring in the snow round where Madame Mina sat, and over the ring I placed some of the sacred wafer. She began white with fear and started to shake. Then I asked her to come near the fire. She stood up, took one step, and then stood completely still. She shook her head and said simply, "I cannot." I was happy, for though she was becoming more a vampire, I knew that her soul was safe within this holy circle. When morning came, I turned to wake Madame Mina, but she lay in a deep sleep from which I could not wake her. Then the sun was high in the sky, and I felt as though I was safer. I left Madame Mina sleeping within the holy circle, and made my way to the castle in search of the three vampire women who Jonathan described in his journal. While searching for their graves in the old chapel, I noticed that there was one great tomb, larger than all the rest. On it was just one word, Dracula. This was the undead home of the King Vampire. I laid some of the sacred wafer in Dracula's tomb, and then began the terrible task of destroying the devil woman lying in the other tombs. It was horrible work, but as soon as my knife had cut off their heads, their bodies began to turn into dust. Mina Harker's Journal, 6th of November. It was late in the afternoon when the Professor and I made our way towards the east, where I knew Jonathan was coming. We could hear the distant howling of wolves. They were far off, but the sound was full of terror. I knew from the way Dr. Van Helsing was searching about that he was trying to find some place where we could protect ourselves if attacked. In a little while, the professor found a wonderful spot. Then, taking his field glasses from his case, he stood on the top of the rock and began to search the horizon. Suddenly he called out, "Look, Madam Mina, look!" I jumped up and stood beside him on the rock. Straight in front of us came a group of gypsies on horses hurrying along. In the middle of them was a long wagon, and on it was a square chest. The evening was now getting closer, and I knew that at sunset the thing within the box could change into many forms and try and escape. In fear, I turned to the professor. Then he gave a sudden cry. "Look, look! Two horsemen are following fast. It must be Quincy and John." Looking round, I saw on the north side two other men coming as well. One of them I knew was Jonathan, and the other was Mr. Holmwood. When I told the professor, he shouted happily, and we both hid behind a rock and held our weapons ready. As the three groups came closer, two voices shouted out, "Halt!" One of them was Jonathan's, and the other Mr. Morris. The gypsies came to a stop, and Mr. Holmwood and Jonathan rode up on one side, and Dr. Seward and Mr. Morris on the other. At the same moment, Dr. Van Helsing and I rose from behind the rock and pointed our weapons at them. Seeing that they were surrounded, the leader shouted, and every one of the gypsies drew their weapons and formed... a circle around the cart to protect it. All four men of our party ran towards the cart. I could see Jonathan on one side of the ring of men, and Quincy on the other, forcing his way to the cart. Jonathan managed to jump up on the cart, and with a strength which seemed incredible, raised the great box and threw it to the ground. In the meantime, Mr. Morris had had to use force to pass through his side of the ring of gypsies, and they used their knives to try and stop him. At first I thought that he had come through safely, but as he jumped up beside Jonathan, I could see that he was holding his side and that blood was dripping through his fingers. Jonathan then attacked one end of the chest, attempting to take off the lid with his huge knife. The nails came out with a painful sound, and the top of the box was thrown back. The sun was almost down on the mountain tops, and the shadows of the whole group fell upon the snow. I saw the Count lying within the box upon the earth. He was deathly pale, and his red eyes glared with a horrible, cruel look. As I looked, his eyes saw the sinking sun, and the look of hate in them turned to triumph. But at that instant came the sweep and flash of Jonathan's great knife. I screamed as I saw it cut through the Count's throat. At the same moment, Mr. Morris's knife plunged into the heart. It was like a miracle, but before our very eyes, the whole body crumbled into dust and passed from our sight. The gypsies turned and rode away in fright, leaving us alone. Mr. Morris, who had fallen to the ground, leaned on his elbow, holding his hand to his side. The blood still ran through his fingers. I ran over to him, and so did the two doctors. Jonathan knelt behind him, and the wounded man laid back his head on his shoulders. With a sigh, he took my hand in his own. He must have seen the sorrow in my heart and my face, for he smiled at me and said, "I am only too happy to have been of service. Oh God," he cried suddenly, and pointing to me, "it was worth for this to die. Look, look." The sun was now right down upon the mountain top and shone into my face so that it was bathed in a rose-coloured light. At that moment, the mark upon my forehead disappeared as if it had never been there at all. The dying man spoke, "Now God be thanked that all has been not for nothing. See, the curse has passed away." And with a smile and in silence, he died a courageous